For WFHB in Bloomington, this is Hereabouts,
a collaboration with the IU Asian Culture Center.
Hello, and welcome to Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. I am Joyce Lam, audio engineer and producer of the show, and you are currently listening to the Citizenship, Patriotism, and Identity episode of Hereabouts here on WFHB. Today, we feature Krishna Pathak, Indiana University alumni for IU's 2019 class. Krishna graduated IU with a major in law and public policy and was chosen to be the commencement speaker for Indiana University's 2019 graduating class. In his commencement speech, Krishna speaks about devoting a majority of his life to being a public servant and what that means to him. When he was 18, Krishna was the youngest delegate to the 2016 Democratic National Convention from Indiana. With that being said, welcome Krishna. I'm very excited to have you speak with us today.
Thanks for having me, Joyce.
I just wanted to jump straight into it and just ask, what should one do in regards to one's civic duty?
I think the first step is accepting it. It's inevitable that perhaps some people out there, whether they're married already or they're still in school or they're working their job and just kind of going about their daily lives, don't entirely think about these community-wide issues, state, local, or national issues, or international issues, and thinking about what civic duty means to them and then how they can expand on it from there is very important. It starts with the individual. I know throughout school we've been taught a lot about the importance of getting out and voting, perhaps getting registered to vote, and maybe being involved with some local organizations. But civic duty is, to me, it's grounded in a world and personal view. So it's going to be have to start with accepting that your individual role is equally important as that of your neighbor or someone in another neighborhood when it comes to local, state, national, international issues. So there's a study from Tufts University that I read a few years ago, and it was made in 2002. It sort of categorized civic engagement into three different categories, which were civic, electoral, and political. Civic was more focusing on your community around you, such as fundraising for a charity, participating in fundraising runs, active membership in a local group or association, and just generally getting involved with your community problems. And then electoral was more voting-centric, getting registered to vote, voting in midterm and off-year elections aside from just general elections, actively displaying button signs supposed to make your opinion heard, and also helping others get registered to vote, and also volunteering for candidates and political organizations yourself. And then finally, the political category was individual, which is contacting officials elected and appointed to let them know what you think about the issues affecting you, contacting your local media, publishing op-eds in your local paper, protesting or boycotting even, and also written petitions or canvassing. These three categories ultimately reflect my view of civic duty in that it's your individual role that is enabled by those around you and also something that doesn't necessarily have to be political either. I believe civic duty can mean volunteering at a local domestic violence shelter. I believe civic duty can mean picking up trash outside of your neighborhood. And I believe that once in an individual's life, they reach a certain level of comfort and security in their own capacity, such as having a regular job, having their expenses and finances in line, not having any significant health issues of some kind. Once they're comfortable, the civic duty is how can you make those around you comfortable too? What's your role in that? And it's, of course, it goes with accepting that you do have a role to play and then going from there.
So, Krishna, you mentioned your individual role is just as important as your neighbor's role. And I was wondering, how does one encourage their neighbor to practice civic duty, to play their part, and show that their role matters in the grand scheme of things?
Well, I think when you as the individual are out getting involved with your community and getting involved with organizations, making some sort of noticeable impact, or perhaps not noticeable, convincing your neighbor will start with engaging them on it and having the same kind of conversation that, hey, I'm doing something in the city or in our town, and I would love to get you involved if you're interested. It's sort of a double-edged sword in that, in my view, a great freedom of the United States and most other democratic countries is that we do also have a right to not be involved. There is no compulsory action or participation in our government. But at the same time, the health and vitality of a democracy rests upon those getting involved and participating. So to my neighbor, I would say, I think that we would be better off if you were involved. If you don't want to, I'll respect that. And I'll still continue to engage you when it comes to my civic duty that I'm doing around the community. So to think of one example, if I'm a city councilor and I know that my next door neighbor has not voted in the past several elections, I would say to them, regardless of who you might like on city council, it doesn't have to be me. I encourage you to vote because I think you can contribute to the dialogue and decisions that will affect everyone in this city. When you sit out, it'll also affect it in a way as well, by sort of putting the conversation on how it'll benefit them, but also how it'll benefit the communities, how I would motivate those around me to get involved.
Right. There's a lot of power in encouraging an open dialogue with one's neighbor while still respecting them. It's definitely very refreshing to hear that, especially considering this political climate as of late. While on the topic of this theme, I wanted to know, how can one express his or her love for one's country?
I think expressing one's love for their country, we can get into what a conceptual definition of love is, but I don't think I'll ever figure that out. I think love is having that commitment, but also history has taught us, and through personal experience of most people in the U.S. and any other country, that sometimes your government doesn't work for you. Sometimes local organizations and institutions around you can make decisions that do not benefit you. Sometimes they might harm you. Whether you're the one of hundreds of thousands of Americans throughout U.S. history that may have been wrongly convicted, whether you believe you got a parking ticket that wasn't fair, injustice is inevitable in anywhere. And when I think about expressing love for country, to me, it's sort of having a continuing faith that through your participation and engagement, you can prevent that or reduce it. And for some, they may not agree with that. That's where I sort of reiterate the whole voluntary nature of this. So expressing love to me is having faith and staying involved even when the tide is not in your favor. And also being critical, sort of expressing your voice when you don't like what's happening. Love doesn't have to be blind, in my view. It's sort of I care so much about what's happening right now that I'm going to speak against it in a way, in the framework of the institution and the organization, but I will speak what I'm genuinely thinking because I believe that it's best for the community. So love for country stems from faith and, I think, commitment. And that's through the good and the bad.
You are currently listening to Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio on WFHB. Currently, we have Krishna Pathak, a graduate from Indiana University's class of 2019, who is speaking to us about matters concerning citizenship, patriotism, and identity. You mentioned faith prevailing through the good and bad to show one's love for one's country. So how does one's actions or even lack of actions toward the greater good shape his or her identity or citizenship within that framework?
It's a good question. I think inaction is also action. And so when someone is getting involved for their greater good or not getting involved for their greater good, it will ultimately impact their identity and then by extension their citizenship. Identity to me is a concept that transcends politics, citizenship, and government. Identity is sort of how one perceives themselves relative to their world. And if I believe that civic duty plays a strong role in defining one's identity, when I think about other components of identity that we've seen sort of normalized throughout, well, human history, it could be where someone works, it could be someone's family, their friends, their internal beliefs and passions, their goals. There's a lot of things that comprise who we are as individuals, and they're so subjective and individual to us. It's the challenge of the state or of any government in any capacity to represent people of different identities through the good and the bad. So in the context of civic duty, when someone is inactive, I think it sort of shapes their identity. If they're inactive for good, it'll shape their identity for the worse. I think it can lead to detachment from your community. It can lead to the idea that you're on your own and you don't need other people to help you because other people don't want to help you, that you have no potential. It can lead to just a very loss of your own individual autonomy and agency, more so that how you perceive your autonomy and agency. I think that people have autonomy and agency regardless. It's just a matter of you have a belief in that. So if you're not involved, I think over time, a pattern of non-involvement will sort of craft this belief in your head that you had nothing to contribute anyway, and maybe you can't have an impact because you haven't been doing anything this entire time, which I don't think is true at all. And in a democratic society where we rely on decisions to be made by elected individuals who represent people, if we have elected officials who are representing less and less people, a small number of people rather than the majority, the inaction of many people end up influencing life for a small number of people who are active. So it kind of goes back to that equal role, equal potential people play. So identity and citizenship, I believe, are equally impacted by action and inaction. And sometimes too much of either one can be harmful. There can be such a thing as, in my view, perhaps maybe an over-involved citizen, someone who may be trying to assert their voice and power in every organization around and perhaps stay around when they shouldn't and sort of drown out the voices of those who may not be as involved. And then similarly, someone may not do absolutely anything when their voice, their presence could be advocating for someone who needs it. So, and that collectively plays a role in identity in that. If someone's not involved or too involved, their perceptions of themselves will be reflective of that.
And on that topic, now I ask, what about your identity and how you perceive your autonomy, agency, and your involvement? What has shaped your personal identity?
I think growing up, it would probably be a mix of socioeconomics, race, some of these common factors that everyone has in their individual lives. But I would say ultimately, personal identity is a function of everything around you. So my personal identity on campus at IU Bloomington was probably a couple of ways a little different, perhaps, from my personal identity back home in Carmel, Indiana. Now, those two were different from my personal identity as a first grader in Charlotte, North Carolina, several years ago. But for me personally, I would reiterate the common factors for me were socioeconomics and race. I grew up in a low-income family, and Carmel, Indiana is a very affluent town, so it was sort of a juxtaposition I dealt with daily, and that informed about how I thought about my individual role in a community or an organization or an institution, and how some factors may impact the logistics of daily life, but that doesn't necessarily impact conceptual underpinning of that. So a low-income person in a high-income area or a person of color in a majority white area, those might have impacts on how their days go. But their individual potential and capacity is, in my view, no different than those in their community, regardless of race, income, gender, or what have you.
You mentioned race being a component to how it has shaped your identity. So I ask now, how has your racial identity as an Asian American shaped your decision to choose what you chose to study?
It's a good question. So my relationship with my race as an Indian American growing up was had a lot of different phases. Growing up in a low-income section of Carmel, Indiana, it was majority white. However, my secondary education sort of expanded who I interacted with, and that's where I discovered Carmel, Indiana's larger Asian American population, which, however, was majority wealthy. So there was still some rift, and there were points where perhaps in my youth in the majority white area of Carmel, Indiana, I did not like to associate too much with being of color in general, whether it was, you know, kids bullying me for the color of my skin, making fun of what I brought to school for lunch, sort of that naive, childish racism that a lot of kids had at some point, versus a more within community racism I may have dealt with throughout middle and high school, where majority of Indian American students or Asian American students in general were in Indian dance classes and the SAT prep courses. The parents knew each other. For me, it was remedial courses. I did not know the rest of the community. Jokes about not being Indian enough or not being Asian enough. So I think traveling through that differing relationship with something so integral to me made me think about how people face this challenge in different ways. Transgender Americans may have dealt with the same sort of within and between community discrimination as well growing up. Low-income Americans may have done that too. So ultimately, race, I think, interacted with socioeconomics for me a lot. And by the time I got to college and I knew I was interested in some sort of government or public service capacity, my major of law and public policy was examining relationships between institutions and institutions of policy and the law. So I don't know if I could draw a direct analogy to race and my environment between law and policy, but it was more so just the idea of let's explore relationships between different organizations that have different functions but still overlap and influence one another. And that, of course, all moves me more towards a profession in government where I'd like to get work done on behalf of an increasingly diverse and pluralistic United States of people of different identities, experiences, and beliefs.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that with me. That was very inspiring to hear, seeing you've come a long way from being the person you once identified with in Carmel to recently being selected as the commencement speaker for your class at Indiana University here in Bloomington. I wanted to know if there were any people or external factors that had contributed to your success. Do you have any mentors whom you regard as influential or have had made an impact on you?
I would say all of my faculty members throughout college and also high school had an impact on me one way or the other. Many of them, I believe the through line between all of these mentors and faculty members was just their availability for me. So whether it was professors in my freshman and sophomore year who I would talk to about classes and majors and these sort of surface level student-like issues. But then also in your senior year where I was struggling with maybe what are the right internships to pursue, how will this impact me after college, and sort of what is my purpose, and all these great existential questions that undergrads will inevitably struggle with. The through line between all these faculty members was that when I reached out to them, they gave their time to me. And I think that was probably the greatest impact on me, because by the end of college, reflecting on my commencement remarks and the role I wanted to play as a public servant, is how can I make myself available to others when they need the help? And that obviously starts with, well, once I'm personally settled in some capacity, then seeing how can I go from there. I do believe that young Americans in particular should obviously try to focus on establishing themselves first and getting to a level of baseline economic health, family, friend sort of security in their lives before trying to then absorb and tend to the issues of others. But ultimately, the impact was my mentors being there for me and then me thinking, how can I be there for others just as they were for me?
Do you have a specific person you have in mind, a specific professor or a teacher back in high school that you encountered with and you just want to share today?
Sure. I have to give you two. In my freshman year, I took an introduction to religion class, I was considering myself agnostic around that time, and I thought, let me just take this to see if I can learn something different. And the professor at the time's name was Patrick Michelson. He was a professor of religion. I had no interest in majoring in religious studies or minoring of it at that time. I considered it later throughout college, but ultimately did not end up going with it. But we have a lot of times in freshman year when I would talk with him in office hours, not just about course content, but also how college was going, what my other interests were, how he feels that the college experience has changed since he was an undergrad, and ultimately just his, you know, handling or being willing to answer any question I just might throw at him. It goes back to that kind of open door that I believe that he and other faculty members had. And then second, another professor of mine named Paul Helmke was very instrumental in my development as an aspiring public servant, talking a lot about the issues in the world with me. He came from a very different background than me. He was an Indiana Republican mayor of Fort Wayne, ran for the U.S. Senate from Indiana in the late 90s, politically and economically, socially, just a very different background than me. But we would, again, he'd always make time for me, and we would talk about the issues, and it would sort of expand my view of considering other views. So those two in particular, I believe, both of them personally and professionally, but in different ways. One, you would think perhaps you might be able to guess that Professor Helmke was my mentor because he taught my major and had similar jobs that I'm interested in. But it was also Professor Michelson, where as just a college student in my freshman year, someone I could speak to, given that I had no sort of similar professional or academic interest in this field, but someone that was there for me. So those both to me were very integral.
You are currently listening to Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio on WFHB. Currently, we have Krishna Pathak, a graduate from Indiana University's class of 2019, who is speaking to us about matters concerning citizenship, patriotism, and identity. Yeah, that's really interesting considering that one of the mentors that you've chosen to share with us today was a professor within the religious studies department, which is not at all what you're studying.
Right.
But it really does encourage one to reach out to the faculty at their institution and just seek mentorship through other avenues. With that being said, I wanted to follow up on a previous question in regards to being a public servant, being involved, and one just being active in his or her community. So I wanted to ask, how would you advise one to get more involved? What are the steps that are necessary to be taken for one to be a public servant?
Well, I think in the context of public servant, in the specific careers of that, there are a plethora of ways, but just getting involved, I say the major step necessary to becoming a public servant is getting involved. And so I think getting involved starts with first accepting that you have a role and a responsibility, a civic duty to play, and then second, engaging those around you in conversation about the issues affecting the world and affecting your community. Also, if you're having a conversation about the issues that you may not think are affecting you, perhaps me and my roommate might not have any relevance to discuss tariffs in China and dishwasher price import prices, but the wider discussion points of U.S. engagement of other countries does affect us. It affects our future. So accepting that a lot of issues that affect you and don't affect you ultimately affect you. And then getting involved is, I would turn back to that three-category model from Tufts of exploring your civic, electoral, and political voice opportunities in your community. And so getting involved with volunteering organizations, community relief organizations, encouraging others to do the same, and then also individually engaging your elected and appointed officials. Ultimately, it's accepting this responsibility and then passing on that same view to others. So together, you and several others, and ideally, you know, communities and states and our country has this greater sense of our individual lives are based on the welfare of those around us. Therefore, it is important and our moral responsibility to be involved. And I think that if we aren't involved, if I don't care, for lack of a better term, about what's happening to my neighbors or those around me, if I think that, you know, I shouldn't have to worry about what healthcare is like for people in California or Minnesota, it essentially tells them they don't need to care about what healthcare is like for me. There's a lot of reciprocity when it comes to human actions, in my view. And the best step of getting involved is realizing and passing along this sense of responsibility that we have to because it's the right thing to do and we would want people to do the same thing for us.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you in regards to that there is a causal effect to the policies being enforced that may not be close to us, which does prompt us to even question whether these policies do benefit just human beings and just our rights as people. And with that, I wanted to ask if there is anything else you would like to add to this conversation, or for those who are currently listening who might feel like they would want to know something that we haven't discussed yet.
I'm not sure if there's anything we haven't discussed yet, but I would just kind of reiterate that I believe that we have a moral obligation to help those around us and to see to the success of others. And if someone might disagree with that, I would implore them to consider what were their greatest successes in life and how did they get there. And I'm more than willing to bet someone, at least one person, was involved. And I believe public service stems from that phenomena of people supporting each other wittingly and unwittingly. And whether it's getting registered to vote or volunteering at a homeless shelter or joining a campaign, as long as you stay engaged, I think that that's one of the best things we can do to get involved.
That was beautifully put, Krishna. I just wanted to thank you again for joining us today on Hereabouts. We're so glad to have you here to speak with us today.
Of course. Thank you very much, Joyce.
Yeah, of course. That was Krishna Pathak, a graduate from Indiana University's class of 2019, who just spoke to us about matters concerning citizenship, patriotism, and identity.
You've been listening to Hereabouts.
Hereabouts is produced with the IU Asian Culture Center and broadcast from WFHB in Bloomington. Our theme music is by Eternal Youth.
Tune in to Hereabouts every other week from 5:30 to 6 on Wednesdays right here on WFHB.